Second case on the docket today, case number 197276, Witherspoon versus Stonebreaker.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Mr. Corzine, are you there?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. May it please the court, John Corzine with the Wake Forest Appellate Clinic. Good afternoon, Judge King, Judge Russing, Judge Gibney. Good Friday afternoon. Under Local Rule 46A, it's my pleasure to introduce the two student counsel on this case. Emily Washburn will do the opening, and then Rohan Shah will do the rebuttal. Thank you, honors, very much.
Very good. Thank you, Professor. Ms. Washburn, please, we're pleased to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Emily Washburn, and I, along with my co-counsel, Rohan Shah, represent the appellant in this case, Lionel Witherspoon. Your Honors, this case involves a hung jury who had deliberated for 2 days, asked numerous questions, and been administered an Allen charge only to reach no verdict. However, upon the presentation of new evidence during jury deliberations and trial counselor's failure to object, the previously hung jury reached a unanimous verdict a mere 10 minutes after being presented with this new evidence. Today, this court has the ability to protect Mr. Witherspoon's Sixth Amendment right to effective assistance of counsel and reinforce the high standards of the legal profession. Your Honors, the state post-conviction court unreasonably applied federal law in this case for two main reasons. First, the state court conflated an attempt to object with an actual objection and then deemed that attempt to be in line with prevailing professional norms. And second, the prejudicial effect of trial counselor's failure to object is clearly demonstrated through the close proximity in time between the presentation of new evidence and the jury's unanimous verdict. Therefore, appellant Lionel Witherspoon respectfully requests that this court reverse the judgment dismissing his petition for habeas corpus. The governing standard for ineffective assistance of counsel claims was set forth by the Supreme Court in Strickland versus Washington. To prevail, a petitioner must satisfy both prongs.
Yes. You say that counsel didn't object. The district court here said the counsel did object. The magistrate judge here, the United States magistrate judge, says the counsel did object. The state court down in PCR court down in South Carolina said the counsel attempted to object. And you all say, and you say counsel didn't. What are we supposed to do with those differences?
Your Honor, the PCR court's classification of trial counsel's attempt to object doesn't amount to an actual objection that the trial counsel ruled on and is sufficient to preserve an issue for appeal. Here, as noted on page 246 of the joint appendix, counsel's exact words in response to the trial judge's question, any objection, were, "I would, Your Honor, but..." And then she doesn't continue on. As also noted on that page, there was ample time.
Our court, PCR court, heard the testimony of the defense attorney, the trial attorney, and found the counsel attempted to object. Are we bound by that?
No, Your Honor.
Counsel the district court and the magistrate court. Magistrate judge both said she did object.
Yes.
We aren't bound by that. You agree with me, we're not bound by what they said.
No, Your Honor. This is reviewed de novo. And the trial court there, or the PCR court, found...
What are we supposed to do with the facts? What are we supposed to do with the facts? The PCR court said they attempted to object, and you all, in your appeal papers, assert as a fact that she did not object. Now that's a different set of facts, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why don't you accept the facts as determined by the PCR court?
The PCR court classified her objection as just an attempt to object, which is not an actual objection. And on they based their ruling on the PCR hearing where trial counsel testified. And in her own words on page 292 of the joint appendix, she classifies her own her own statement as merely an attempt to object. And the respondent's brief.
Well, it's not even much of an attempt, is it? Because to begin with, her statement is conditional. I would object. And then she says, but, which sounds to me like she says, well, I would, but I won't.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
And I don't see how you can construe that any other way.
Yes,
counsel, didn't the, I believe the PCR court noted counsel testified that she was often cut off by the judge. She was presumably trying to be polite because she was in South Carolina courts for this PCR hearing. But this judge often would rule quite quickly on her attempted objection. So why was the PCR court unreasonable in reading the transcript to say, I would, and then the judge cuts her off as she's saying, but, and there goes her opportunity.
Your Honor,
why is that unreasonable?
The trial judge did object interrupt her two times previously on pages 197 and 198 of the joint appendix, and then on pages 230 of the joint appendix. However, at both of those times, he interrupted first while she was making a motion for a directed verdict, and the second time while she was making a suggestion for an answer to a previous jury question. However, both of those were conversational, and the judge and the trial counsel had dialogue between them. Here, trial counsel's words, I would, Your Honor, but, and then just stopping and not continuing to pursue that objection, nor state any grounds for the specific objection, is objectively unreasonable and doesn't.
I have a question on that. In your papers, you do, you suggest that the reason that her objection was not sufficient, or was deficient performance, was because she didn't explain it fully enough to preserve an issue for appeal under South Carolina law. And I know the other side has some law where they say, no, this would be sufficient. But I had a question about, is your argument that she was deficient for failing to preserve the objection for appeal? Or is your argument that she was deficient for failing to draw the trial judge's attention to the objection and obtain a ruling?
Your Honor, we would argue both. It was deficient for her not to object to this and point to the fact that it was new evidence being introduced during jury deliberations, which the trial judge had already noted in refusing to answer previous jury questions is highly improper to supplement jury deliberations with the introduction of new evidence. But it's
Ms.
also
Washburn.
Yes, Your Honor.
What should she have done? should she have asked for a bench conference or insisted that, I mean, she, you know, one could argue that at that stage in the trial, she didn't want to look like she was arguing with the judge, and that might be a somewhat acceptable strategy. But couldn't she have asked for a bench conference with the judge or made the dreaded speaking objection saying that, well, Your Honor, this needs to be explained fully with witnesses, and it's too late to do that, and it's confusing to the jury.
Yes, Your Honor, she could have done both. As previously noted on page 246, the record does state that there was a brief pause in the proceedings where Mr. Witherspoon was asked to stand. So she could have asked for a bench conference or for the jury to be excused if she wished to be heard on the objection outside of the presence of the jury. However, with prevailing professional norms, other defense attorneys have also objected in the presence of the jury and been heard on that. So that would have been a different option for her as well.
What's your best case that an attempted objection that was the counsel tried to object, but for whatever reason didn't get it out? What's your best case that is deficient performance and that it's violates clearly established federal law, that is insufficient?
Your Honor, this South Carolina Court of Appeals held in Haskins versus Fairfield Electric Co-op that when a trial judge doesn't rule on the objection and then counsel doesn't pursue a ruling, that there's no decision for an appellate court to review. So because trial counsel here failed to object, failed to state a grounds for the objection, and failed to secure a ruling for the objection under South Carolina Rule of Evidence 103A1, her performance was deficient and did not preserve any issue for Mr. Witherspoon to have appealed, and also contradicted his Sixth Amendment right to effectively confront the witnesses or the evidence that had been presented against him.
Have you tried to make the prejudice showing that that you would need to make for the appellate argument? That so if your argument is that she didn't preserve it for appeal and that was so deficient to be that clearly established federal law tells us that's so deficient to be ineffective, then you need to show prejudice by saying, proving to us that a court of appeals in South Carolina, if it had been able to reach the issue, if the issue had been preserved, that the South Carolina appellate court would have reversed the outcome here, right? The outcome would have been different.
Yes, Your Honor. And the prejudice prong has been met.
Ms. Washburn, you take position. The law is clear in South Carolina on that. That the evidentiary part of the trial was over and it couldn't be reopened, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor,
this was right in the middle of the jury deliberations. But now, are you saying that the deficiency here was by the trial counsel only, or are you attributing ineffective counsel claims to other of the lawyers who represented your client along the way?
Your Honor, the ineffective assistance of counsel claim is confined to the trial judge in this instance because she did not object.
Why didn't you bring the claim on the direct appeal? That lawyer filed an Anders brief.
Your Honor, I cannot speak to that.
That lawyer threw your client to the wolves, filed an Anders brief.
Your Honor, the issue was not preserved, and this court granted the oral arguments on the issue with the trial counsel alone. And to go back to Judge Rushing's point about
and the counsel on appeal from the PSR proceedings filed an Anders brief. Do you know what those are, Anders briefs?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's when you say there's no claim. There's nothing to raise on appeal.
Yes,
tell the appellate court. In here. This fellow's had six lawyers, counting you all.
Yes, Your Honor. And there was nothing to... Sorry, go ahead.
Just looking at those raises concerns about me, to be honest with you. Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. And the issue was not preserved for appeal.
I'm a trial lawyer, and she was the one who was under the gun. She was under the gun. She was sitting there in the jury deliberations and had to face that judge who'd been pushing her around during the trial. And she got pushed around right there, I think. But these trial lawyers ought to be willing to plant their feet and make a record for their client.
Yes, Your Honor, and we would agree. And to go back to Judge Rushing's point, the South Carolina Supreme Court has held in State versus Hart, and the South Carolina Court of Appeals has held in State versus Pinkers that while the display of physical characteristics is non-testimonial, it does constitute evidence. So this was an improper introduction of evidence during jury deliberations. So that was clearly prejudicial to Mr. Witherspoon. And that's clearly denoted by the short time frame between the jury who had previously asked to be declared a hung jury and their unanimous verdict after a mere 10 minutes after
the case was reopened there during the jury deliberations, and additional evidence was presented. And the request to reopen didn't come from the prosecutor. He stood mute when all this was going on, I think. And the request to reopen the evidence came from the jury forum, of all people. He wanted the trial reopened to present additional evidence and said what the jury wanted, and the prosecutor stood mute. By his obligation to somebody a fair trial. Go ahead.
Your Honor, the case was you, not.
If I were you, I wouldn't. I just some advice. I wouldn't interrupt judges too much. But go ahead.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm having a hard time hearing you. I didn't know that when you were finished. I apologize.
That's the drawback of the system we're under now. And I didn't mean to be critical of you. You're doing a great job. You go right ahead.
Your Honor, the case was not reopened in this instance. And just the jury's request, the trial judge does have discretion to grant jury's requests. However, the trial judges in State versus Winkler, the South Carolina Supreme Court held that while a court may permit juries to review evidence during jury deliberations, it's the review of it has to mirror the way that it was presented at trial. And in this case, it did not mirror it because Mr. Witherspoon was never asked to present his physical characteristics at trial, nor was this video zoomed in, paused, and enlarged for the jury to view, much less the fact that they were side by side. Your Honors, I see that I'm running out of time. May I briefly conclude?
You can, but I don't understand what you just said. I thought just exactly the opposite, that it was reopened, not officially reopened, but effectively reopened for the picture and for the show up.
Your Honor, it wasn't officially reopened, and regardless,
I agree it wasn't officially reopened, but as a practical matter, it was reopened at the request of the jury. It was reopened. I'm saying that. In an effort to assist your client or you, not to be critical of you at all.
Okay.
I think in this instance, was reopened.
Yes, Your Honor. And that just goes to show that trial counsel should have objected to the reopening of it in the presentation of new evidence during deliberations, which she failed to do. And Your Honor, the state post-conviction court's application of federal law was objectively unreasonable here. Trial court's attempt to object and her intentions to make a record were insufficient because intentions are not preserved in records, actions are. And here, trial counselor's failure to object to the introduction of new evidence during deliberations was clearly deficient and highly prejudicial to Mr. Witherspoon. Therefore, for the reasons stated in brief and oral argument, appellant Lionel Witherspoon respectfully requests that this court reverse the judgment dismissing his petition for habeas corpus. And my co-counsel will be happy to answer any further questions you have on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Washburn. We appreciate you. Let's see, Mr. Evans?
Yes, sir.
Good to have you with us, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Tommy Evans, Jr. I am from the South Carolina Attorney General's office. I represent the respondent in this case. Our position is that the U.S. District Court truthfully stated within its order the pivotal question is whether the state court's application of Strickland was unreasonable, which is different than whether defense counsel's performance fell below the Strickland standard. Our position is that the district court was proper in its ruling granting summary judgment. One, because the state court didn't make a proper application of Strickland in the PCR, applying it to the actions of defense counsel. Our opinion is that defense counsel did make an objection. She was asked by the trial court, is there an objection? And she said, I would, Your Honor, but she was cut off. So we don't know what she was going to say after that period was being cut off by trial counsel.
Mr. Evans, it's contrary to objecting. I would object, but means I'm going in the opposite direction.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree because we don't know what.
Well, how can you say that? I mean, it's standard English.
Well, first of all, I think that is we're being speculative, which I don't think we should do in a case like this. We should go by what's on the record. Second of all, she can say, Your Honor, I would like to object. But I don't know if you can rule in my favor, or, but I think this is improper. That's why I wanted to object. There's a lot of things that could have been said in that situation when she made that statement. But we don't know. It wasn't asked to her on PCR. I wish it would. So we have to go by what she said in the first part of that statement, that she would object.
Yeah, then you just eliminate the word but.
Yes, I would eliminate the word but because we don't know what she could say after that, but she was cut off. So I don't know what was her, what's her intentions or what was her thinking. But the first
part. Do you agree, Mr. Evans, that if she had said to the judge, Judge, this is reopening the case and you can't do that while the jury's in deliberating. Everybody knows that. He would have said, you're right.
No,
that would have been the end of it.
I don't know if he would have said that, Your Honor, because it was clear by the record that he was going to allow whatever the state wanted to see to see. Yes, sir.
Lawler, South Carolina, in that regard, was totally on her side. It was an objection that she should have made, and it was an objection that should have been sustained. The point is, she didn't specifically, she didn't make the objection. Is what the other, your colleague on the other side there is saying. She didn't make the objection.
Well, of course, we wouldn't be here if they agreed with me, Your Honor.
Final law is made and should have been sustained because it's the law.
Well, there are case law.
They opened the case and put in additional evidence. And the defendant convicted in 10 minutes.
Okay. There is case law that basically saying that this is not reopening the case because the video was already in evidence. U.S. versus Washington was the D.C. Court of Appeals case. Pretty much says that, and it's pretty much on point with this case, that since the actual defendant was being seen when the trial, and he was identified by the congressional informant, it is not reopening the case. This is not putting new evidence. This is just a aid to the jury in order to make an actual truthful verdict in this case, because there could have been individuals in the jury that was not able to see him properly. Therefore, for the judge to order him stand before the jury so they can make a proper identification, that would give all jury members the same playing field in which they can make a proper verdict in this case. So it is our position.
And then, to come in the trial, though, be subject to cross-examination and all those things.
That was aid the jury in deliberations was not reopening the case. That's our position. It's no different than the case of U.S. v. George, where the jury used a magnifying glass in order to properly see evidence. It's the same situation. Our position is was not reopening the case. It was giving the jury the ability to make a proper verdict in this case, giving them the ability to aid them in order to make the proper decision. If that was not him on the video, they can rule that he was not guilty. It can win either way in the situation. I don't think the trial court knew what they wanted to see, but it was obvious during the record that the trial court was gonna let them see whatever they wanted to see, regardless of any objection that was made by defense counsel. And in our opinion, that defense counsel made a proper objection in that case. It does, for an objection to be an objection, it doesn't have to be an actual stated the word objection. All it has to be is a situation where the court realizes that defense counsel is going against what they're about to rule on and a ruling being made.
Are you arguing then that there was an objection interposed?
Yes. My argument is that she made an actual objection in this case.
And she did object.
Yes,
sir. Public defender objected in this instance. Okay.
Yeah, that's my position. Now,
and the PSR, not the PSR, whatever they call it now, the PCR.
Post-conviction relief, Your Honor.
That judge said there was an attempt to object. Not that there was an objection. There was an attempt to object.
Yes, sir. I think he said that because that's what defense counsel actually said on testimony in PCR. But the district court and the magistrate, U.S. magistrate, said it was an objection.
Object is an objection.
Yes, sir. I mean, that's our position that she actually made an objection because when she said it was actually a ruling from the court. Yes, sir.
The PCR had an attempt to object, as the PCR judge said, has found. An attempt to object equals an objection.
I would say
South Carolina or federal court authority that says that.
I don't know of any federal court authority or South Carolina authority. I mean, under Rule 103 of the South Carolina appellate court rules, the only time you would need to make a reason for an objection if it's not clear by the facts of the actual case. Which this case it is clear what she was objecting to. She was objecting to the court ordering his client to stand for that jury. And so our position is that that's sufficient. Because when you make an objection, it's only making this in one of two reasons. Either one, they exclude evidence, or two, preserve a particular subject for appeal. And it was obvious in reading of the record, the judge who stated himself, whatever they want, I'm going to give it to them. So it was obvious that whatever request they was going to make, the judge was going to honor that request. So the only other standard to make an objection after that was to preserve the record. And our opinion is she did that. It was sufficient enough to preserve the record because she made a statement to the court and forced the court to make a ruling on that particular statement. That is all that is needed to be made in order to make an objection in the case. And
well, but the thing is that, you know, everybody was tired because they had been dealing with this case for a long time and they were sitting there and they were impatient. And maybe the judge was going to allow the evidence in come hell or high water. But I don't think the lawyer did much to point him, did anything to point him in the right direction to say this is essentially doing a show up or a lineup in the courtroom or creating a demonstrative exhibit or whatever you want to call it. It's wholly new evidence with the freeze frame on the video and Mr. Witherspoon having to stand next to it. If she had pointed that out, the judge would have said, "You're right."
From what I've read in the record, I don't agree with it. I just don't know the judge was going to do that. And being a former trial attorney myself, there are certain instances where you know where the court is going, and you know the temperament of certain judges. And
the lawyer here has no. Isn't representing the judge. The defense lawyer here is not being the prosecutor. The defense lawyer's loyalty is to her client. To her client, not to herself even. It's to her client, not the judge. She had to act on behalf of her client. If she had objected, under South Carolina law, as I see it, the objection should have been sustained. And so she should have objected. Because it was prejudicial, seems to me, because show up right in the courtroom with this new evidence after everybody rested. They rested the case and argued the case, instructed the jury, and the jury deliberated. They'd even given them an Allen charge, dynamite charge, trying to break the tie, and it didn't work. So they did. This incident occurred, and if it's new evidence, they reopened the case. Effectively, right there in the courtroom at the request of the jury.
I totally agree.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to take all your time. You go ahead.
I totally agree with you, Judge King. She does. Is her harm against the representative of mine? You're absolutely right. But sometimes in a situation like that, you know we'll have to pick your battles, and you don't want it to be more detrimental to your client than it should be. Even she said in PCR that. If I was held in contempt, it wouldn't have helped my client at all. He would still have to stand up. So that's a judgment call that she made in that situation. I think under Strickland, we don't hold judgment calls against attorneys in situations because none of us are there in that situation. So therefore, personally, I think and our position is that she made an objection. That objection was ruled upon. It was sufficient. Objection for the case to be the situation to be appealed, and they didn't raise that in appeal. That was not this attorney's fault. That goes to appellate counsel, And maybe there should have been a PCR raised against appellate counsel in this case for not raising this issue in the appeal, which was not done. If I may, I'd like to go to the second prong of Strickland.
There's people by more than one lawyer along the way here. There have been six, as I say, six sets of lawyers, five sets before they got to the before we got to Wake Forest folks who are helping us out here now. And maybe it's a collective situation. Go ahead.
I understand your point, Your Honor, but the only cases before you today is the actions of the trial attorney. And our position is that she didn't do anything wrong. She might have not have been as vocal as any one of us thinks she should have been. But I think that the assessment on Strickland is not what we would have done in that situation, but what she done in that situation, which was enough in order to preserve the record for appeal. And that's the only way that you would object to that situation. It is clear by the record that the trial court was going to grant what the jury wanted in that situation. So all she could have done at that period is to raise an objection, which she did. Wasn't as vocal and as forceful as I think any of us would like to have seen, but I think it was enough in order to preserve the case for appeal, and it should have been raised in appeal and not.
And that's the PCR. And that the question about whether she objected and the judge acknowledged the objection and said, I think it's proper, overruled her. That's a factual question, is it not? That the PCR court made a factual determination about what actually happened. Is that right? Or is this a legal question for us?
I think it was a factual question whether or not she actually raised an actual objection, which was ruled on by the PCR court. According to her statement, she says, I attempted to object. And I think that's
and what we and under AEDPA, there's a pretty high standard of review, right, for us for legal questions, but especially for fact findings by a PCR court.
Yes, there is, because this court obligation or the actual district court's obligation was to make a determination of whether or not the PCR court followed Strickland and not whether the defense attorney lived up to the problems within the Strickland case, Sean. So yes, there is a pretty high standard that must be that is raised in a particular situation as this. If I can get to the second prong of Strickland, whether or not any deficiencies, if there were different, would have made the results different, our position is it wouldn't. And even though she testified in the PCR that she spoke to the jury members changed their mind once that situation was done, our position is that was nothing due to her actions. It was due to the actions of the trial court. And I would reiterate, it is clear on the record that the trial court was going to allow the request of the jury. There was nothing in the record that would show that the trial court had any other intentions but to force the appellant to stand to be actually shown up against the actual video. Personally, I don't think there was nothing that she could have done other than make it more detrimental to her client by getting in a shouting match with the court in front of the jury, which is already obvious that this judge didn't have the temperament for something like that. And I think that's the reason why she kind of stood down once she made her positions clear. But once the jury made that request to have that video played and to have the video blown up in that situation, the judge was going to allow him to stand and be there. So that is the actions from the court that changed the result of the case, not the actions of the actual trial attorney. Therefore, strictly the second prong does not apply in this case either. And that's our position. And I said before, even if she objected forcefully and the judge ruled against her, I just don't know if it's meritorious, because there is case law saying that this is allowable, that this is not reopening the case. This is not new evidence. This is not testimony. This is just a defendant that was being allowed to aid the jury in making a just decision on this case in a fair position.
But you, that is not evidence, right?
The evidence, the video was already in evidence. Yes, sir.
You're saying this was not evidence. That's the position of the state of South Carolina, that this was not evidence.
Yes, sir. It was not correct? Evidence. Yes, sir.
All right. I understand.
What evidence? What was it?
It was, the video was evidence. This was an aid to the jury in order for them to make a decision. It's no different than a jury member using a magnifying glass or asking a court to enlarge the picture that was already in evidence for them to be able to make a decision regarding this case. I'm sure the jury wanted to make the right decision in this case. And surprisingly, they were a reflection of a side mirror of the person in the back seat. So I'm sure the jury wanted to make sure that the person in that mirror was either the defendant or not. And that's all this was, is for the jury to make a fair decision regarding if that was the person in the back seat who obviously made the drug transaction. There was no doubt about that. The whoever in the back seat of that car made the drug transaction. The question was that the defendant or was it not the defendant? And by making
Judge Gidney asked you, what if it wasn't evidence, what was it? I can't understand your answer.
It was something to aid the jury making. Yes, sir.
Tell me specifically, what was it if it wasn't evidence?
It was an aid to the jury to make a fair decision. That's what it was. Yes, sir. It wasn't evidence because the video was already in evidence. It was something that was already in evidence, and the jury used that video to make an aid and use the actual show up to aid them to make a fair and just decision in this case. Because if it wasn't defendant, they would have found him not guilty, of course. I'm almost out of time, so I would just ask this court to affirm the decision of the district court in issuing the summary judgment motion. And I will thank you for your time and attention this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Good to have you with us. Appreciate it. Mr. Shaw, you're going to do the rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Good afternoon.
Good to have you with us, Mr. Shaw. Thank you for your work.
Thank you, Judge.
Go ahead.
All right. May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. I just have a few points on rebuttal. The first point is to Judge Gibney's point about the reasonable probability under the Strickland test for but for counsel's errors, a potential reasonable different outcome may have arisen. And previously to this video being shown as new evidence to the jury, there were two jury questions that the trial judge stated that he would not answer because it would be highly improper to supplement evidence in jury deliberations since those questions did not arise at trial. And this is seen on page 229 of the joint appendix. And therefore, if trial counsel had made another objection to make sure that the judge had even heard her, because from the record, unlike what opposing counsel states, it's unclear whether the trial judge even heard her. We don't know about the time in between. So just another objection just to preserve the appeal for record, preserve the objection for record. And it's clear that trial counsel knew how to preserve a record, an objection for the record. On page 241, she states that there was an Allen charge that she objected to within judge's chambers, which wouldn't be on the record, and then came back on the record and stated, "Judge, just to preserve this for the record, I want to just state that I did object to this." So it's clear that she knew how to preserve a record for potential appeal. And therefore, if she had made an actual objection and stated that this was highly improper and new evidence, then there's a reasonable probability that the trial judge would have agreed with her along those points, considering that nearly a few minutes beforehand, he had refused to answer jury questions that he stated would be bringing new evidence into jury deliberations.
Well, counsel, I appreciate your argument. I'm not sure that just showing a reasonable probability is your standard here though, right? Because you have AEDPA in addition to Strickland. So you have to show that there's no reasonable argument that counsel satisfied Strickland. That's what the Harrington case says, right? So you have two layers of review. So you have to not just show that there is a probability of a different outcome, but that there's actually no reasonable argument that counsel satisfied Strickland.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. Under 2254 D, it's the unreasonable application of clearly established federal law. And this is sort of construed differently because we're not arguing the contrary to point, but we are arguing the unreasonable application of law of the Supreme Court. And in fact, the Strickland test bases it off of a reasonable probability of but for counsel's errors, and then the prejudice point, which Judge Rushing, you mentioned earlier. And it's clearly deficient not to object to something like this because it's based off of prevailing professional norms. So again, even despite the fact that this is not an objection, a one more objection just to ensure that the judge heard her and to ensure that there's a reasonable probability that the trial judge would have agreed with her and stopped this from happening. In fact, there was a brief pause in the proceedings, as co-counsel mentioned earlier. There's even a time when in the PCR testimony, trial counsel states that Mr. Witherspoon looked back at her for wisdom, and she stated, the judge has asked you to stand, you must stand. She could have made an objection at that point as well to preserve it for the record. And even in the PCR hearing, she could not state a reason or a trial strategy that she didn't object. And that's just that states to the fact that there was no objection in the first place. She said if there's one thing she could do differently, she would have objected, and because that was the most detrimental to her client. And Your Honors, the last point I will make is to opposing counsel's contention that this wasn't new evidence. In respondent's brief, opposing counsel states that the evidence in jury deliberations can be shown, but only if it mirrors presentation at trial. And here it's clear that there was no mirroring presentation of trial. There's combination here on the prejudice point. The fact that Mr. Witherspoon was asked to go and face the jury instead of his side profile, and the fact that a video shown during trial was now paused and blown up. So it became a still image, which is a completely new form and therefore does not mirror its presentation at trial, and therefore was highly prejudicial.
You're saying what they presented to the jury there was a new piece of evidence?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's exactly what I'm saying. The combination of Mr. Witherspoon standing up.
It was a blow-up.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
What was the size of?
Your Honor, we don't know the exact size. However, we do know that a screen dropped down from the top of the courtroom and that it was blown up. However, there's no size mentioned in the joint in the appendix.
But what was the size of the screen?
Your Honor, we also do not have this information. It was not stated in the joint appendix. All we know that it was blown up and it was clearly pixelated as well, which trial counsel stated in her PCR testimony.
The PCR judge knew the size of the screen, right? Because it was in the same courthouse, it sounded like, from reading the testimony.
Apologies, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
I mean, it's not in the record, but the PCR judge knew because they talked about it.
That's exactly right. The PCR judge would have known in the testimony. However, the actual size is not in the record that we are here with today. And Your Honors, therefore, Mr. Witherspoon respectfully requests this court to reverse the judgment dismissing his petition for habeas corpus. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Shaw. And we want to particularly thank both Ms. Washburn and Mr. Shaw and Mr. Professor Corson for your work in this case, and their Mr. Evans for your argument as well. And if we were in Richmond, we'd at this point introduce ourselves more formally and shake hands with counsel, or at least tell you how much we appreciate your work. And the next time you come to Richmond, I hope we can do that.
Thank you, Your Honor. Always an honor, and enjoyed meeting you too, Mr. Evans. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.